Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on how one American political party has come to control the majority of state and national political offices. Republicans now control the U.S. House and Senate, 31 governorships, and 68 state House and Senate chambers.
Puts a focus on finding and grooming great talent and promoting them at the state level and talking the issues that matter to people at state and local levels, you know, such as lower taxes. And these are things that have connected with people.
Is America becoming a one-party country? That is the subject of our program today. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America, and this is our daily program, As It Is. Barack Obama has won the last two presidential elections. Many Democrats believe Hillary Clinton can win if she campaigns in 2016. Even if she does win, the presidency would be one of the few offices Democrats would hold. Republicans now control a large majority of America's state and national offices, including most of the governor's offices, state legislatures, and the U.S. Congress. This has happened for many reasons. One of them is white voters. Many have been leaving the Democratic Party, especially in the Deep South. Another is Republicans have outspent and outworked Democrats at the local and state levels. The Deep South is an area that includes Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, and South Carolina. It also includes parts of five other states. They are Florida, Virginia, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Texas. In 1964, Democrats held or controlled almost all of the political offices in the Deep South. That was the same year that President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act into law. The measure gave legal protection to minorities. Experts believe the Civil Rights Act was the main reason for whites leaving the Democratic Party, giving control of the South to the Republicans. In the 2014 election, Democratic Representative John Barrow of Georgia lost to Republican Rick Allen. Mr. Barrow served in Congress for 10 years. He was the last white Democrat serving in the House from the Deep South. Late last year, Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu lost in her effort to get reelected. Republican Bill Cassidy won her Senate seat. His victory removed the only Democrat to hold statewide office in Louisiana and the last Democratic senator to represent the Deep South. With the victories, Republicans now hold 54 of the 100-seat Senate chamber and 247 of the 435 U.S. House seats. The New York Times newspaper reports that in the Deep South, Republicans control not only every U.S. Senate seat, but also every governor's mansion and almost every state legislative body. The results are not better for Democrats in other parts of the country. There are Republican governors in 31 of the 50 states, including 7 of the 10 largest states. Only California, Pennsylvania, and New York have Democratic governors among the 10 largest states. Even in states where most voters are Democrats, Republicans are having success. In November, voters in 3 Democrat-majority states chose Republican governors. The 3 are Illinois, Maryland, and Massachusetts. The website Real Clear Politics reports that Republicans hold the governorship and both houses of the state legislature in 24 states. Democrats have that same level of control in only 7 states. Republicans also control 68 of 98 House and Senate chambers at the state level. In the elections last November, Republicans gained control of 11 state legislatures that had been held by Democrats. Ruffy Williams is a spokesman for the Republican National Committee. He says the party worked hard to find candidates and identify issues. Republicans, he says,
put the focus on finding and grooming great talent and promoting them at the state level and talking the issues that matter to people at state and local levels, you know, such as lower taxes. And these are things that have connected with people.
Guy Molyneux does public opinion surveys for Democratic activist groups. He admits Republicans have outworked Democrats at the state level.
I don't think Democrats have, in any sense, ignored the gubernatorial elections or state legislative elections, but I think it's probably a fair summary to say that the constituencies on the Democratic side have not focused as much or as well on those state races.
Republican control of state-level offices has also given them control of redistricting. State and national electoral districts are created in the states. Control of this process permits Republicans to create districts whose voters are more likely to vote for Republican state legislators as well as members of the U.S. House. For example, the new Pennsylvania 7th Congressional District includes parts of 5 different counties. The Republican-controlled legislature created the district with the help of a Republican governor. The shape of the district has been described as an oil spill, roadkill, or a crab. Critics say the district and others were drawn to protect Republican officeholders. The news is not all bad for Democrats. Democrats get large majorities of the votes of African Americans and Hispanics. As the percentage of minority population grows larger than whites, Democrats hope to regain control of the country's politics. However, Guy Molyneux says Democrats know it will be very difficult to succeed without the support of white voters.
Democrats have by no means written off the white vote, and there are reasons that we have to be optimistic about improving our percentages there, but certainly in these off-year elections and in these state legislative races, we definitely need to do better.
On the Republican side, Ruffy Williams says the party has to reach out to minorities, something he says it has not done well in the past.
For a while there, we weren't engaging in minority communities as much as we should have been. Recently, we have been going to African-American, Hispanic, Asian youth communities.
That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz at the VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America. Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Recycling or reusing metals is much less costly than making them from raw materials in the earth called ore. But when old cars, household appliances, and industrial equipment are thrown away, metals are mixed and often difficult to separate. So they are usually placed into landfills without being separated. The United States Environmental Protection Agency says almost 15 million tons of this scrap metal is placed into landfills every year. Although iron and steel are easily separated with strong magnets, other metals, such as copper, aluminum, and titanium, are not. So products with a mix of these metals are either sent to landfills or to other countries, where workers separate the different metals by hand. But university scientists working with a private company say they have created a very accurate method to separate these light metals using a machine. Don Eggert is the founder of O2M Technologies. His company worked with the University of Utah to develop the metal separation technology. Mr. Eggert says the system is based on the knowledge that all metals react to a strong magnetic field.
When the metal falls through the field, even though it's non-ferrous, it's not attracted to the magnet, but the magnet causes there to be an electric current inside of the metal, and that causes the metal to have a magnetic field itself, which interacts with the magnetic field it's falling through and pushes it to the side.
Mr. Eggert says changing the frequency of the magnetic field causes metal pieces to fall into different containers.
So, for example, if we want to separate aluminum and copper, we hit the right frequency for it, and the aluminum will push more away from the magnet than the copper will. So the copper falls straight down, the aluminum falls into a different bucket.
Mr. Eggert says the separator is not costly to build.
What we've calculated so far is that the expense-to-value ratio, that is, how quickly you can pay back the cost of the technology over time, we're currently estimating it to be less than 1 year.
The separator works only with metal pieces up to 1 centimeter wide. But the researchers are building a bigger magnet to separate larger metal parts. They hope to begin operating it at a metal shredding center by the end of this year. There, they will be able to test it in a real-life environment. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. You can read and listen to more technology stories at our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. On November 11, 1918, a truce was signed ending the hostilities of World War I. The Central Powers, led by Germany, had lost. The Allies, led by Britain, France, and the United States, had won. The war lasted 4 years. It took the lives of 10 million people. It left much of Europe in ruins. It was described as the war to end.